Voerman broek weekie. Voerman broek. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is, of course, now it is a wonderful, wonderful Thursday, and it's wonderful because it is Mostoch, eh? It is Mostoch, you know, payday for some, and when it's payday for some, it's payday for all, and it is what it is. Ladies and gentlemen, yesterday we had a conversation surrounding, right, surrounding rape in terms of, in terms of children, like, how do we as adults, black people, as adult Africans, as adult people in general, how do we deal with, child rape? How do we deal with it amongst our families? And, how do we deal with it in terms of, understanding? Do we even understand that it's a violation? Do we understand that there's a level of trauma that comes from somewhere? Yesterday, today, I saw a clip of a young lady, and she was talking about, I saw a clip of a young lady, and excuse me if I seem a bit absent-minded. You know, I'm just gathering my notes. But I saw a clip of a young lady, and, she was advocating for this book that has recently been published, right? And it is, it's called She Who Heals. And this book, personally for me, I think I know everything in the book, basically. So, but I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at it from the perspective of young ones, right? And these young children, these young adults, right? They need to read a book like that, because it talks about your trauma. It talks about what exactly it is that you're feeling, and it talks about, it really does. It talks about what you need to hear. And I think that many of us in our culture, in our young lives, right? We don't talk about it. We don't talk about it. We don't address it. You grow up later on thinking that it's just how you are, but nobody was angry. Nobody was born angry. There's no one in this world that was born angry or guarded or there's nobody that was born in a bad space. It's other people that put us in those bad spaces. But today, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to continue with that conversation so that we can somewhere, somehow, right, reach a consensus of some sort. But before that, please hold that thought.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM in any of its
staff. Eva Tero Urikoni Mando Toto Ingida Ashike Kapeno Nweko Tete Opoewe Eku Kurile Oshafa Fana Nongeshe Faili Mehola Mo Iho Etike Kovano Hile Koshuana Onongeshe Fa Yapumbo Kukaraya Kovano Okupitira Mo Eagle FM Otuna Emi Toda Njuka Okupitira Oipindi Konu Kwan Dadoi nawa nuneudo o tukwetera o special ange tashake ngeje pa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona o ijabweli nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Alrighty, good evening to you. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about trauma, but we're talking about trauma in a different kind of way. And the reason that we talk about trauma is because many of us don't understand what it is. So one of the questions that I have for tonight is do we believe that it goes away? Mm? So the initial umbrella of the conversation is sexual assault amongst children, child sexual assault, right? And now my question for tonight is, do we believe that it goes away? And what I mean by this is, I believe that many of us don't talk about it. And there are a lot of people. In which household have you gone into and they casually bring up this conversation? Or they bring up a conversation around anything? Like anything to do with importance, right? They can bring up the day that you failed because that's humiliation. They can bring up the day that you did what, the day you did what. But when something has happened to you, they tend to pretend like it never existed. It's like that one time that, that maybe your cousin intentionally stabbed you. Intentionally, you just woke up in the middle of the night and stabbed you. And then all of a sudden, the family is just pretending like it never happened. You are screaming and getting nightmares in the middle of the night. And nobody's coming to your aid because they are more like, if you just ignore it, then maybe it will go away. And I feel like that's what they do with sexual assault, especially amongst children. I think that they believe that if you are young and it happens to you, that eventually you will grow up and you will forget, right? But the seriousness of the matter is that you don't actually forget. And even if your mind forgets, even if you disassociate, even if you place yourself in a different place and you only come back afterwards and you don't fully remember or remember at all what just happened to you, even if that happens, right, your body knows what happened to it. Your body is a whole entire entity on its own, and it knows what has happened to it. It knows the impact of the trauma. It knows what has happened to it. And for people to walk around and pretend like it didn't happen, right, is one of those questions. It's so deep. So there's this young lady. She's an associate of mine. Or if I've learned to pick my words wisely, because if you're not my friend, you're not my friend. I shouldn't call you my friend. So she's an associate. She's someone I know. She's a friend of a friend, right? So she's an associate. This girl, she was going through a breakup, right? And this breakup in itself took a lot from her. It took a lot from her financially, took a lot from her spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, everything. It took a lot from her because this was somebody that she loved. And she loved this person and she shared secrets with this person and this person shared secrets with her. And one of the secrets that she shared was the fact that when she was in grade 10, her dad just, like when she came back from school, right? She found that it was only her dad in the house. Now imagine you are a girl child that's raised by your father all your life, right? You don't live with your mom. You are raised by your father all your life. He has taken care of you all your life. And then one day while you are in grade 10, you come home from school, you find your dad there and you're like, oh, hi, pops. How you doing? And he's like, no, I'm good. How are you? I'm fine. You know, the normal pleasantries that you would share with a parent that is always there. The same, if you don't know how that feels because you didn't have a dad, it feels like the way you talk to your mother. If your mother is in the sitting room, like, hi, mom, how are you? It's the same. So she goes to the room and bam, her dad follows her. Her dad follows her and then her dad rapes her. Like her biological father rapes her, like straight up. And after that, it was, that was the trauma, right? That is what happened. The betrayal, the disloyalty, the every emotion that comes with that kind of act, right? That is the pinnacle of it. But also, putting it in a different dynamics, because these are our Wambo people.
putting it a different dynamics, this man spent something like 15 years in jail for that particular crime, for raping his daughter. He spent 15 years. And do you know who handed him over to the police? Do you know who called the police? Do you know who instigated that? Mm-hmm. This man must not get bail. This man must know. You know who it was? His biological mother, her grandmother. Her grandmother stood up for her and went all out for her, to protect her. And this was something that, something that I didn't see much in our people. We usually side with our children, and I don't know what happens there, but that's what happens. We usually side with our children, or we usually try and see if we can make it go away or somewhere somehow. So he went to jail, and she had to now live with it. So her grandmother, as we can see from her actions, right? She's one of those cuckoos that, that verbalize. You know, verbalize and talk about it. But the problem is that they are not only two in their family, right? It's gatherings, it's family events, it's the father's other children, it's the father's ex-girlfriend or girlfriend or whatever it is. It seems like everybody was just tiptoeing around her. It was tiptoe. Nobody spoke about it. And even when she would get upset or get upset about it, or somebody did something that was roughly similar to what she experienced in terms of like maybe groping you and pulling you. That's why we call it sexual harassment. We call it sexual harassment because you don't have the right to pull me. Eh? No matter what you want to tell me, why are you pulling me? Eh, can you not talk to me like a human being? Because me, I don't see you bullying the president. But yet, because it's me, you want to be bullying me. What's problem? What's wrong with you, man? Hmm? So, with her case, this is something that happened to her when she was 15, right? And by the time that I had met her, I think, she was like, what, 27? 27 or something around there. Or 27, 26. And she had been very quiet. And then when she gets drunk, she cries about it and she tells everybody. So you are thinking, but how can you get drunk every single time and then that's what you talk about? It's because it didn't heal.
Anna, have you thought about what you're doing next year, my child?
I'm not so sure yet, mommy. I want something that will help me build my future.
Then why not apply to NUST? The Namibia University of Science and Technology's applications are now open.
Really? Do they offer IT and engineering?
Yes, and so much more. They have business, health, science, and media. NUST has exactly what you need.
I'm applying today. NUST, here I come.
Applications for 2026 are now open. Visit www.nust.na to apply. Namibia University of Science and Technology, reinventing the future.
Usave's shelves are stocked with fresh produce, pantry staples, and more. All at prices you can afford. Pay only $134.99 for selected Lovis premium disposable nappies, $54.99 for 2 kilos Surf hand washing powder, 750 milliliters Polagrip dishwashing liquid, $14.99, and 400 milliliters Dawn hand and body cream, $29.99. You save, I save, we all save at Usave.
All right. So she would cry every single time she gets drunk, and tomorrow she'll pretend like she doesn't really know. But then on top of that, she was also going through a breakup and she was on mad antidepressants. And it was like, you know, the type of people that take out a plastic of medication and it's just for that day. That one time you're like, oh, that's a lot of medication. And that was her reality, you know, and someone would ask, yeah, but it happened like 10 years ago and you wouldn't understand it because it has never happened to you. Because even you yourself, eh? You argue about that other cousin that betrayed you, eh? And you talk about it all the time. And that's just the cousin that betrayed you only, didn't even touch your body. Now, what about somebody that has violated? Somebody that has really, really went all out and hurt me? Am I not supposed to feel anything? But ladies and gentlemen, as we're diving into our conversation, today we're going to have our conversation from those that want to forgive or those that want to survive traumatic experiences, and then we will take it from there. But please stay tuned and please learn something. Please hear these people out there. These people are not speaking out of their mouths, which I know me, I just feel like talking today. No, it's because of experiences. It's because of what they've seen, what they've known, what they've heard. It is because of life. And ladies and gentlemen, me as the matriarch, I say again, we as Eagle Media House or Eagle FM do not claim ownership of any of the clips or audios that we present here on Pulling Heartstrings. They are strictly for illustration purposes and for learning purposes and for a glimpse of somebody else's reality. Enjoy.
Forgiveness. It's one of the oldest concepts known to man. We learn about forgiveness when we're just children. I have two kids, a 3-year-old and an 8-year-old. And if I had a dollar for every time I asked one of them to say sorry to the other one, I would be absolutely rich. But beyond that, what am I teaching my children about forgiveness? Furthermore, what have I taught myself about forgiveness? In order to share with you what I know about forgiveness, I have to take you back about 20 years. Back to 2002, when I was about 12 years old. I was with my best friend, who was a couple years younger than me. And together we were in the little town that we grew up in, called Augusta, Montana. It was the middle of the night. It was pitch black out. And my best friend and I were running. We were running down a dark alleyway. This alleyway led to a big white and red house on Main Street. And this house was important to us because in this little town that we lived in, there was only one law enforcement officer, the Lewis and Clark County Sheriff's Deputy, and he lived in that white and red house. On this night, we were being chased down an alleyway by my stepfather. We were on our way to the big white and red house to turn him in to authorities. I'm a victim of childhood sexual abuse. I was born on the Blackfeet Reservation here in Montana. Unfortunately, I wasn't alone in my abuse. My best friends, I would invite them over to have sleepovers at my house like any normal little girl would. And unfortunately, my stepfather would molest them as well. But on this night in 2002, something was different. My best friend and I were sexually abused, but this time we were angry. This time we were done telling my mom. This time we were going to go to the cops. As soon as my stepfather caught wind of what we were doing, he jumped up out of his chair and began to chase us down the driveway. This was the scariest night of my entire life. I remember everything about it. I remember the sound of the gravel beneath my shoes. I remember exactly what I was wearing. And I remember exactly how confused the deputy's wife looked when she answered her back door and found two young girls standing there. We explained to her what we were doing. We explained that we thought we were still being chased. And she went inside and got a cordless phone. She came back and she said, in order for us to move forward, we would need to call the 911 dispatcher and report what we were doing there. So we did that. We explained to the dispatcher over the phone that we were there to turn my stepfather into the police for sexually abusing us. She allowed us to come inside, and there we waited for the deputy to come downstairs. He came downstairs, and he was wearing his full uniform, and he had his gun belt on and his pepper spray and his handcuffs. And I remember vividly thinking in my young mind, wow, this is a really good cop. He sleeps in his uniform. That way he's ready for crimes to happen. So he asked us to sit down and fill out police report forms. So together, my friend and I sat down and filled out these forms with our stories. That was when my friend's parents came to pick her up and take her home. She gave me a big hug. She told me everything was going to be okay. And she went home. That was when it was time to figure out what was going to happen to me. The deputy explained that he had spoken to my mom over the phone and that she was going to be supporting my stepfather through this. She told him that she no longer wanted anything to do with me. The deputy called my immediate family members in the area, in the towns of Fairfield and Shoto, and they said that they didn't want anything to do with family drama. So he explained to me that what was going to happen next was going to be difficult. He said there's no place left for me to go except for a children's shelter in Helena, which is about 85 miles away. And right as the sun came up, the cruiser pulled up in front of the big white and red house. And I remember just wishing I could ride shotgun, but I couldn't. The police officer placed me in the back seat on the cold, hard plastic. And it was at that moment that any sense of triumph or victory that I had went out the window. I was the one in trouble. My stepfather was never charged or convicted. He was only made to do community-based sex offender treatment, and he was never placed on the registry. So I rode to Helena in the back seat of the police car and arrived at the children's shelter there. And I remained there for a number of days until the Department of Family Services could complete a background check on my real dad, who lived in northwestern Montana. So eventually my dad was finally able to come and pick me up and take me home. Immediately after this, I went into this mode of being completely ignorant to what I had been through. Sexual assault is very shameful. It makes you feel like it's your fault. And I didn't want to feel like that, and so I just pretended like nothing happened. I did well in school. I graduated high school, and I decided I was going to go to Alaska to go to college. And I did that. I wanted to be an air traffic controller. But before I knew it, my trauma was starting to present itself in some really scary ways. I had never received mental health treatment, so I didn't know what was going on. But before I knew it, my life was spiraling downward. I was using drugs. I dropped out of college. It was time to come home. So in 2010, I got on a plane and I flew home to Montana. And while I quit doing drugs, I switched drugs for alcohol and I started drinking heavily. And I continued to drink and I continued to drink. I had reestablished contact with my mom. We were constantly fighting. Our relationship was so turbulent. But that was my mom, right? I'd always been taught that I needed to forgive. But here's the thing, is truthfully, I hadn't really forgiven her at all. When I got back to Montana, I was driving down Highway 93, the same highway that all of you will pull out onto when we leave here. I was driving down the road in the middle of the night. My windows were down. My hair was blowing through the wind. I'm sure I had some loud music playing. Not a care in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to be arrested for driving under the influence. In the state of Montana, when you're arrested for driving under the influence of alcohol, you're required to complete what is called a chemical dependency evaluation. And this basically means that you sit down with a mental health professional and you go over your crimes and your traumas and you make a determination on what level of care you would like to receive or they think you should receive. For me, it was determined that I needed to attend inpatient treatment. And so a couple weeks later, I was in Butte, Montana, and I checked myself into the Montana Chemical Dependency Center. At the Montana Chemical Dependency Center, I learned about healthy ways to deal with my trauma, coping skills. I learned about emotional regulation. I also learned the importance of self-care. This was the first time that I had ever been given the opportunity to have mental health care professional and qualified it was the first time, and I had never actually sat down and told my story to someone like this. So I told my story to my counselor, and I remember so vividly, she said, "Tara, this is going to sound like I'm being really mean, but the relationship that you're trying to have with your mom, it's sick." And I didn't want to believe her at first. No, that's my mom. I wanted my mom in my life. But as I would learn, my counselor was right. I didn't listen to my counselor, and I decided that I was going to go visit my mom over in Augusta in the same house that she lives in, and her husband as well. I went to go visit her, and as I walked inside her house, I discovered that there was a 12-year-old little girl having a sleepover at their house. That did not sit well with me. I got angry. I went home. And I decided I was going to use my voice for a second time, but this time I was going to tell the world. So I sat down in front of my laptop, and I made a video, and I recorded my story just as I'm telling you here today. And I decided to use the power of social media. I uploaded the video onto the internet, and the response was immediate. It grabbed everyone's attention. And before I knew it, I was telling my story to schools and prisons. But I wouldn't have been able to do this without my understanding of forgiveness. While I was in treatment, I was given reading where I was supposed to research forgiveness. And that I learned so much. First off, I learned two things. Forgiveness does not mean condoning. Second, forgiveness does not mean revisiting. And third, I learned that forgiveness doesn't have just one definition. There are multiple types of forgiveness, and I believe that understanding them can empower a victim. The first type of forgiveness is full forgiveness, also known as exoneration. And this is the top level of forgiveness.
Okuyipuranga o mathimbo ya mukucha, omoroshe kitu na ompango dhizido monjira. Ngashi, ino taaguru kila shampoka. Ino hinga kuhio dhungo, ino hinga no mataera ga papa, ino hingirira. Omoroshoka, ina tukara okutura onkaramonyo ee, moshiponga. Ino ninga omuyarurwa, ino ninga oshinene nima. Kara omorongithi monjira, omu inekewa. Ninga shoka sho monjira, eto kupitha omwenyo.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low. Because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Save and win at WB in the Pick a Box birthday promo. Enter today with your Smart Buy card. Get a 2 kg bag of Tastic Rice for just $39.99. 3x1 liter Crystal Gold Olive Oil Blend for $199.99. A 500-gram Sunshine D Original Brick for only $19.99. And 2 2-liter Fanta bottles for a sweet $37.99. Learn more about Pick a Box at www.vurmanbrock.com. T's and C's apply. We care.
Forgiveness, full forgiveness, can be set as a goal, as it is healthy. It's not always possible. In cases of childhood sexual abuse or even just sexual assault, you will usually find a victim who has a hard time forgiving. Please don't expect full forgiveness from everyone. The next type of forgiveness is called conditional forgiveness, also known as forbearance. Conditional forgiveness means that you're putting the relationship on probation. The relationship is important to the victim, and they're going to move forward, without feelings of revenge or resentment. And the beautiful thing about conditional forgiveness is that after time, trust can be rebuilt and it can morph into full forgiveness. And I think that's really beautiful. The third type of forgiveness is called false forgiveness, and this one is not healthy. And this is where I was stuck with my mom. I had convinced myself that I had forgiven her, but in reality, I didn't. And how did I know this? Because I still felt feelings of hate, anger, revenge. And that means that I really didn't forgive. The next is unforgiveness, and this one is the tricky one. It's probably the most common, but it's widely agreed upon as being unhealthy. How do you forgive the unforgivable? And without forgiveness, can we still heal? Well, I believe the answer is yes. And that's because of an option called release. With release, you're releasing this person from your life, just as you're releasing your feelings of resentment and vengeance and hate and anger. Forgiving what you can and leaving the rest. I believe that when we approach forgiveness as more of a process with multiple options, we're not backed into a corner. And for me, I was able to begin using my story to empower others. Not only did I start speaking and sharing my story, but I started to lobby Montana's legislature for changes to our laws. Last year, we were able to eliminate Montana's statute of limitations for crimes of sexual abuse. We were also able to extend the civil statute of limitations so that victims have more time to sue their abusers. In 2017, I passed a law, House Bill 298, which aimed to educate Montana's children in public schools about body safety. It was signed in April 2017, and it was named Tara's Law. In this last year, with some help of some amazing lawmakers, we were able to establish the country's very first Sexual Assault Survivors Day right here in Montana. And on April 7th this year, we'll celebrate our first holiday. These achievements helped me to give my power back, but I was also able to take my power back in person. With the help of an incredible attorney, I was able to serve my stepfather with a lawsuit. To my astonishment, during the only legal deposition that ever occurred, I expected him to lie and say that he had done nothing to me. But to my shock and amazement, this man who towered over me as a child and spent countless nights sneaking into my room on his hands and knees crumbled before me and admitted to what he had done. Ladies and gentlemen, childhood sexual abuse is very common. 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused before the age of 18. If you're a Native American female baby like me, born on a reservation, your chances increase to 1 in 3. This also means that sexual predators are also very common. And in my story, the actual police officer that my friend and I ran to in the middle of the night was just charged and convicted of sexually abusing children last year, along with child pornography. He'll be sentenced in April in Helena at the federal courthouse. Talk to your kids. The biggest line of defense is educating your kids about body safety. Tell them what to do if something happens to them. Next, if a child comes to you with allegations of childhood sexual abuse, believe them. Finally, choose them. Choose your kids, always. And I want to leave you with one last thing. There is one person in your story that deserves forgiveness no matter what. Someone who has probably made a lot of mistakes, burned a lot of bridges, probably treated people really badly, or maybe even gotten arrested like me. This one person who deserves your forgiveness, no matter what, is yourself, the survivor of trauma. And I think that is an idea worth sharing. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Today we are running, we are having a conversation around child sexual abuse and how we as family members or as a community or as a society or as a Namibian people actually deal with it. Now, last night our question was, how do we as black people or as Africans view sexual assault? We have dived from children fidgeting each other, and from one older child fidgeting a younger one, and from an adult fidgeting children, and then also from adults fidgeting one another. We have dived into that, and also the theories of the stories that align to sexual assault happening and how we view it. You know, I speak about this a lot, you know, in intervals, of course, because I know that many of you can't actually handle the conversations that I like to have. So I give it to you guys in intervals, in small doses, so that you are able to digest these conversations. Because these conversations, ladies and gentlemen, are triggerous conversations, especially if you have seen it, if you have experienced it, if you have been around it. If you don't understand it, it could also be triggerous, because you can also ask yourself why, especially if it is somebody that you love and you see them suffering because of this and you don't understand why, and there's no way that you can comfort them because you don't understand it, and you keep asking questions like, but why are you still mad? But it happened a long time ago. Or what were you wearing? I think that the biggest thing that irks me in contemporary Namibia is the victim blaming. Many of us blame the victims for being violated. Like, how do you blame me for somebody doing something bad to me? Like, what did I do? And this is the same. I think that that one in itself comes from a parental shock. So, let's take the example of, You get violated in the household by relatives. It could even be a sibling, right? And your parent finds you. 90% of the parents, even though we don't want to admit it, even though we don't want to really look at it through a telescope and see it as it is, 90% of parents, right, make it seem like it's everybody that is participating's fault. So you find a whole 15-year-old boy, or a 15-year-old girl, with a 9-year-old boy, and then you beat all of them and make it seem like they were all participating. I've had this conversation with you gentlemen a long time ago. 90% of you guys have not actually lost your virginities to something that you wanted. You might have thought that you wanted it because you had an erection, but just because you have an erection doesn't mean you actually want it. Sometimes it's just your body reacting to physical touch. It's not that you are deeply and madly in love with this person, and even if you are, this person is supposed to know better. That is what we are saying. We're saying that the older one is supposed to know that this is wrong. And if it wasn't wrong, then why are they not doing it in front of people? That is a question. Because even when you cheating on your wife, right, you don't cheat in front of your wife just like that. You don't bring your mistress home while your wife is sleeping and tell your wife to shift up because you're quickly with your mistress. You don't do that because you know that that is wrong. And it's the same way as you knew that stealing sugar was wrong. You knew that, but you still went ahead and did it. You knew that stealing sugar was wrong. And that is why you were creeping into the sugar room. That's why you were walking, not what, sweeping away your footsteps print. You were sweeping it away. Why? Because you knew it was wrong. So now, if I'm to ask you if it is so correct, if it is so correct, then how come it is not done in public so for everybody to see? It's because it's wrong. You can say what you want, and you can, and a lot of us are also very much in denial of what happened, especially men. Men are very much in denial of what has happened to them because they visualize rape to be something else. Men think that rape is something where you going to the bushes and some guy that has a lot of scars on his face and he's dangerous and he's been doing drugs and alcohol, he jumps out of nowhere and he's going to jump you and then he's going to beat you and tear your skirt and rape you and then try and kill you and you run away and we're going to find you all disheveled and ruffled up. And that is the picture, or that is the imaginary picture that we have painted in our minds. And that is what we associate rape to looking like. We don't associate rape to looking like silence. We don't. And that is why we go back to a theory that I have, that why are we waiting for the boogeyman to come when the boogeyman already lives there? All of us were young once upon a time. We were all told about the boogeyman. We were all told, don't talk to strangers. And this goes back to Ina's conversation, because my grandmother told me not to talk to strangers. You see, we're told, don't talk to strangers. But nobody ever tells us that don't talk to any stranger. They say don't talk to strangers. And usually strangers are gross. Strangers are gross. Strangers are dangerous. Strangers are oversized people that are wearing small clothes, or thin people that are wearing oversized clothes. Strangers are different looking. They are foul smelling. We have this idea of what a dangerous person looks like. And when this dangerous person doesn't show up looking like a dangerous person, then the likelihood of us trusting this dangerous person is very there. And that is why you can find scenarios where you leave your youngest children with their oldest sibling and you come back to a raped child. You come back to a molested child. You come back to a sexually assaulted child, but you left this child with their older siblings, because the danger is not supposed to come from internally. It's not supposed to be an internal danger. It's supposed to be an external danger. We're supposed to be being violated by other people. We're supposed to be violated by strangers. We're supposed to be kidnapped by strangers. We're not supposed to be having teachers that are cooperating with criminals to abduct us. We're not supposed to be having that. Our teacher is supposed to protect us. Our parents are supposed to protect us. Our siblings are supposed to protect us. Society is supposed to protect us as children, and that is what we know. So you are thinking now, but why are they so hurt? They are hurt because the society that was supposed to protect them didn't protect them. And now they have to fend for themselves in a world that they didn't think that they ever had to defend themselves from. The number in studio is 083-288-401. If you have a conversation, if you have an ask, if you have a dilemma of some sort, if you want to contribute to this conversation, because at the end of the day, right, we keep saying, let's speak up, let's speak up, let's speak up. We keep saying this. We keep saying this, but yet we are very silent. You guys are all on your app. You guys are listening with your earphones. You guys have a ton of credit. The credit even expires there, but you don't want to talk. You don't want the world to hear your thoughts or your argument towards something. You don't want to make a difference, but yet you want the world to be different. The conversation that we had with our last caller yesterday, you know, the one that dived into 12:30, how that conversation was so fruitful. All of the conversations that we had yesterday were fruitful. They were fruitful because we dissected real conversations, many questions that you guys didn't understand, many things that we were all thinking but couldn't say. So please do call in. The number in studio is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio. So we're talking about sexual violation amongst children and how we as families cope with it. And one of the questions that I also had posted today is, do we really believe that it goes away? Now, our previous speaker there, Terry Walker, Our previous speaker over there was talking about the fact that she was molested as a child by her stepfather. And this is one of those, it's one of those telltales, right? They usually say that if a child is being molested and there's a step parent in the house, it's usually the step parent. I think that it's because it is said that step parents don't really have a deep connection to children that are not biologically theirs. But also, I believe that that is false, because also parents also molest their own children. So I'm not really looking at it in that perspective. But then also, the point that was there was that for a long time, this child kept quiet. Now, for you that ask, why didn't she say something, right? How do we say anything? How do we say that, oh yeah, mom, your boyfriend is, or your husband is, eh? How do we say it? I don't think there's any easy way to say that, especially when your relationship with your mom is already sketchy on its own. Let's say it's not sketchy, but just your mom's character. It's very difficult. Sometimes we go through life with our children assuming that they can't see our personality traits. They can't identify which parent to talk to and which parent not to talk to. We associate them to being stupid. We associate them to being incompetent. Especially when it comes to human emotion, we think that they don't see anything, they don't feel anything, they don't know nothing. And yet, right, when they need to ask for assistance in any way, they ask this parent. When they need to ask for emotional support, they ask this parent. Why? It is because they can see, and it's because they can know, and it's because they do know what is happening. So, the reason that I wanted to actually have this conversation was because I had a very disturbing story. So, there's a friend of mine. This one is a friend, or it's a family friend. We grew up together with this young lady. She was, I think she's like 3-4 years older than I am. And, she had a baby young. She had a baby young, and it was like talk of the village. That, oh my goodness, she had a baby young, she had a baby young, she had a baby young. But then, lucky enough for her, it wasn't a bypass thing, and it wasn't molestation. It was just two young kids that loved each other that decided that they're going to be in a relationship together, and that's it. You understand? So this particular gentleman now, he went on to have 3 more other kids with her. And, they had a relationship, and that was it. And then they also had, then eventually at some point, right, they got married, and I was a bridesmaid, at the wedding. And, they got married, and it was one of those happily ever afters. In all honesty, we liked it for them. Because they've always just been together. It was just always just them. And they had their children, but also, something that was a bit of a miss for me personally was the fact that, within their relationship, there was no real responsibility towards children. You see how I told you that they had a gang of children, right? There was no real responsibility towards children. So the children were never in the care of their parents. Their parents are basically gallivanting and living their lives, and the children were always taken care of by others. So I can say they were negligent and they were reckless. You know, they were not ideal parents. But then the husband eventually grew into being a husband and being a father. So he was very hands-on with his children. And he was also very present, even though the children don't live with them. So eventually, within their marriage, they decided to have a young baby. They decided to have a baby girl. Or they decided to have a baby. And then the baby came, and the baby is a girl. So now they have an equalizer, 2 boys, 2 girls. And the problem, right, is that gentlemen goes to work. Gentleman is busy. And then ma'am is also busy, but then ma'am has more free time. But then also with us normalizing alcohol and normalizing drinking, that would mean that she doesn't really have time to be looking after no babies.
So the baby is usually just left with the aunts, or the baby is left with the grandmother or the uncles and all of that. And this was the routine. So at some point, in the weekend at like 10 o'clock, she decides that, guys, I'm going to go out. She doesn't live there. She was there because she was there house sitting or something. She decides that she's going to leave the child there. And there was a party at the house. And this party was a gang of young people, right? Like young people, and they were having their fun. And she decides that she's going to leave the child and she's gone. And she went to chill and she went to hang out. And in the midst of this, right, this was now Saturday evening, between Saturday evening and Sunday morning, her child, her three-year-old, was raped by, we don't know, right? The child was violated by, we don't know. And do you know, and this is what happened between Saturday and Sunday. Now, luckily, we are saying that, I think she's a fighter because she, in a rombokera, you know, she didn't get sick and, you know, she, like, in a rombokera. So it wasn't, oh my goodness, the child was violated and we have to go to the hospital and the child passes away. It wasn't like that because of the damage that is done, because there is a lot of damage done there. You know, there's so much damage done. You know that people that are violated, right, can also become barren because of the damage and the because of the damage done to the organs. So now you are wondering why your wife is not producing children, for example, and it's just because of something that happened when she was 4 years old. And the whole time she's not even thinking about that incident, because most probably nobody ever spoke about it up until whenever, and she locked it out of her mind or whatever the reasons, or she might even be hiding it, because you heard from our previous speaker that it is shameful. It's not your shame to carry. It's not your embarrassment to carry. But you carry it anyways, because you feel like you feel dirty, right? Because of something that happened to you. And it's not, there's no way we can explain that you should not, because it is a feeling. Maybe you will get to a point one day and then you say, like, you know what? I didn't do anything wrong and I will not feel ashamed for this. You understand? So, okay. So Sunday comes, right? Sunday comes and Monday comes, Tuesday comes, Wednesday comes, Thursday comes. And then Thursday comes and literally they only noticed on Thursday that the child is limping and that the child is violated. So the anger would come from, this is why I say that it's important to leave your children in the care of, I don't even know who we can leave our children in the care of nowadays, because it seems like everybody is so sick and everybody is so dangerous. You know, you leave the children with their uncle, the uncle does something. You leave the children with the teacher does something. You leave the children with the parents do something. You leave the children with the stranger does something. It seems like there's just no way in our society that children are actually safe. They go to school, the teacher sells them out. They go to the park, somebody kidnaps them. They go, they're in the house, somebody violates them. It's just such a cruel world. And for people to only notice on Thursday that Okanogavaninwa, you know, is so angering. It's so angering, like, especially for me as a mother, it's so angering. And this is a baby. The question is, are you not changing the child's diaper for you to see what is happening with your eyes? are you not washing the child? So this child has not bathed since Saturday. Or what type of child neglect is this? That's why I keep telling you guys that it's not everybody that is meant to be a mother. It's not. You guys just want to make babies with people that are not maternal. If a woman cannot be maternal with you, then what is she going to be with your children, your offspring? This woman doesn't care if you're in the hospital and you want to have you want to have children. You want to start a family with a person that doesn't care if you are in the hospital, has no maternal bone in her body, and that's the person you want to start a family with. But obviously, yeah, we can say that maybe it's because they started young and they loved each other and all of that and all of that. But these are things that we should look at when we are making children, when we are bringing these children into the world, right? These are things that we should look at. So it took what? 6 days for people to notice that this child was violated. And then on top of that, right? They don't want to make a case or something like that. They don't want to make it a big thing. But luckily here in this country, if it's a thing of that nature, my dear, it is not in your control. It is a case that is made because it's a state person. And that is something that I can say, Kucha, yes, let's clap hands. Because if it was up to us human beings, we would say, no, I'm not pressing charges for this person murdering my child. You know, somebody would say something like that. But luckily it's not in your power. It's not in your control. And basically what they want to do is they want to handle it as a family. How are you guys handling things? Why are you guys so afraid of putting criminals where they belong? Is it because this criminal is only a criminal in one area and not a criminal in other areas? Is it because this is just a robber? He's not a murderer. He's not a what-what. He's not a what-what. We have the culture of hiding bad people and sikiriraring bad people. There was a guy that beat his wife to oblivion. And when the police came, his mother hid him and said that, no, he's not a bad person. He's not what. And this is just, his wife eventually left, right? But his wife used to say that this man is going to kill somebody because the way he is bad. And people keep pretending like it is normal for him to beat people the way he does. But eventually one day this man beat a 7-year-old child to death and left the child in the sun to rot better. And it's maybe because if we had talked to the police first.
Onda karahandu yako parateza morwe data. Paife ohandimo kuyadi. Nondaka ne data no shoyo o tumaraka vahupi. O network aimwe o kufuta rumwe o kuinyinga rumwe o kujapa ndali fio papa ndauka o nda pumga o network oyo hai dira dira ya fange o mafikwa amwe o handi streaming o mafikwa amwe o handi popi o mafikwa amwe o handi ninga ishe poshika ndo shimwe pamwe na parateza o inda holora ame ishi pangere osho pa umwene Dira dira o makwata fanoni data mom karo wiri mona parega o kutuma ko tumaraka o ku streaminga no ku denga pamwe na parates konga parates namibia always
parates. So yes, ladies and gentlemen, but then let's dive into, you know how we talk about, the girl child being sexually violated, but yet we don't talk about the boy child. It actually does happen. And with the boy child, it is one that goes unspoken. The boy child really, really does not speak, but let's dive into it.
This is the story of my life falling apart, my journey in putting it back together, in my attempt to use my story to change the way we approach the topic. There's no nice way to put this, but about 2 years ago, I was raped. At 4 o'clock in the morning, I found myself walking the streets of Kingston in a part of the city I had never seen before. I was lost, I couldn't reach my friends, and no cabs were answering. I was alone, and I felt numb. After walking for over an hour, my phone rang, and it was a friend. They asked me what was wrong, but I couldn't bring myself to say it. This paralyzing mental numbness that would come to control my life for the next 2 years wouldn't let me. So I instead replied with a vague indication that my night hadn't gone as planned. With that said, my friend likely thought I was drunk and suggested I get to bed. Eventually, I arrived home just as the sun was coming up. I went to my bedroom and decided to get some sleep in the hopes that going to sleep would erase the night from my head. But when I closed my eyes, I realized these horrifying memories were not going away. This very bed became my safe space or my hideaway. It was removed from a reality that I still couldn't face. The bed remained my home as I tried to forget what had happened and as I experienced a new pain, a pain unlike any physical or mental pain I had experienced before. I cut myself off from the outside world. I stopped seeing friends and communicating with my loved ones. I became deeply apathetic towards everything in my life, school, friends, family. Nothing mattered to me anymore. I stopped caring for myself in many ways. By the end of my second year, I had dropped about 50 pounds. I either found myself without an appetite or actually lacking any motivation to eat. But most of all, I had convinced myself that I didn't deserve food. How could I if I just lied in bed all day? Despite the fact my life was falling apart, the people around me didn't notice much of a difference. To an observer, my behavior actually wasn't that unusual. I think we all here know someone who might drink multiple times a week, or maybe they sleep too much, or maybe you know someone who's become apathetic and uncommitted. We often see these things as normal because they're such common coping behaviors of university students. My struggles were compounded by what felt like this constant and deep pressure looming over my head. This pressure was the result of an image I had of myself as a guy's guy, and the people around me had come to know me by this identity too. My years leading sports teams, competing in weightlifting, and working on an oil rig became these unique barriers to getting the help that at this point I desperately needed. We tend to think of men as both physically and emotionally strong. Physically strong enough to deter or resist an unwanted sexual advance, and emotionally strong enough to maintain composure even in the most damaging and hurtful of circumstances. If I wasn't strong enough to do either of these things, I questioned if I was the man I always thought I was. Instead of seeking help and support from my loved ones, I turned my back on them. I became angry, aggressive, and unreachable. Eventually, this new extreme behavior of mine no longer went unnoticed, and these very people began to push away. As the months passed, this numbness, anger, and deep depression that had come to take over my life slowly began to give way. I started to feel like myself again and began returning to the social circles I had previously abandoned. Although I was slowly but surely recovering, I still denied the event in my head and had actually, in this weird way, convinced myself the rape had never even happened. One night, about a year after the incident, I went out with friends drinking more than I should have. I drank that night as a means of dissociating myself from the reality that I couldn't face. But on this night, I chose to do something I had long wanted to do, and I made my first call for help. I reached out to what was now my former partner of 4 years and told them, as the first person, that I had been raped. A short time later, I made my next call for help when I reached out to a counselor. This time, I attended the session after previously canceling, but I was unable to tell them exactly what had happened, so I left feeling unsatisfied, helpless, and just as desperate as before. My next attempt to call for help was when I considered pursuing legal action against the people who had raped me. I thought to myself, this could provide me with some closure or allow me to feel I'd finally done something to lift myself from the mess that was now my life. However, my mind quickly became clouded with the image of these people staring across from me in the courtroom, their word against mine. What if the judges and others thought I was lying? Why would I only bring something to court months after it had happened? I thought my image as a hyper-masculine male would surely fall apart as the people that knew me found out what had happened to me. And I questioned if I would be blamed for my own rape. Lastly, I considered the statistics. In Canada, roughly 1 out of 10 people that experience sexual assault will go on and report it to the police. Yet, out of every 10 that do report it to the police, only 2 will lead to a conviction. I thought if a young woman is so often unable to convict their male abuser, that I would surely have no chance. It was pointless, the risks too high and the benefits just too low. Today, I stand in front of you as a survivor that is still trying to put together the pieces almost 2 months later. I've made strides in some areas, but I continue to face challenges in many others. After missteps with counseling and deciding not to pursue legal action against the people who had hurt me, I decided to try a new avenue, and I decided to try to share my experiences as an attempt to heal. The first step in this process was writing an article for a university paper on my campus. I thought it would allow me to share my story, hopefully support other survivors, and use it as an opportunity to advocate for better resources for people like me on my campus. The article received an overwhelmingly positive response. It showed to me there was a community that wanted to support me that I didn't know existed before, and that people's perceptions of me would not be changed as a male survivor. I also learned that my story resonated with other survivors and that people who hadn't experienced sexual assault were better able to understand and empathize with people like me. While many survivors or people who experience traumatic events may not find publicly sharing or discussing their experiences as the best way to heal, for me, this was a key step in my healing. In fact, recently my life has brightened. I found medication which works for me. I found friends who make me feel loved and supported. And I have begun to actually enjoy spending time with all my loved ones and friends once again. And perhaps most importantly, I'm excited about what the future holds. And I feel confident I can and will make the most out of it. Sitting here today, you might rightfully expect me to view the people who raped me as sick, twisted individuals, undeserving of forgiveness. And for a long time, I viewed them exactly that way. But today, my view has come to evolve and change. As I came to realize, holding on to these deep negative feelings towards them was not allowing me to grow and heal. For this reason, I've had to come to a certain level of forgiveness so that I could carry on and heal. This is why I'm on stage today, as a victim, to try to provide insight into how we can move forward, both as individuals who have experienced sexual assault and as the greater society that should be supporting them. You may wonder why exactly I decided to share with you my story of sexual assault. I refused help because I believed men had to be independent. I told no one about my rape because I knew my emotions would come out, and I didn't believe real men showed their emotions. I couldn't face the outside society or world anymore because I was no longer the person I thought I was. I allowed my body to decay because I could not admit even to myself that this strong body I'd built up had not even been strong enough to protect myself. My relationship crumbled as I was unable to tell my girlfriend that I had been raped because I believed it would change her perception of me as a man. What I've come to understand is that there is no one identity of a man, and there's no necessity for one person's type of masculinity to be the same as another's. From a young age, men are taught to man up in times of crisis or pain, to use physicality to show dominance, to never be emasculated, and to not show their emotions. A study from the University of California, Berkeley, discovered that when men had their masculinity questioned or challenged, they were more likely to immediately become more aggressive and hold homophobic beliefs and attitudes. This study indicated an overarching issue with the male psyche today. Many men struggle with what their identity is and thus rely on these outdated ideas of masculinity, whether that be having to be stronger than their friends, being able to drink more, being able to sleep with more women, or being able to not cry. The notion that we should reject more fluid gender roles because they conflict with masculinity is fundamentally misguided. As I've sought to learn more about what makes me a man, I've learned how gender equity and a liberation from traditional gender roles can release men from the constraints of masculinity. Challenging one's own identity or one's own masculinity means stripping it down and from there rebuilding it in a healthy, productive way. You can be a man who cries. You can be a man who has never played a sport in your life. You can even be a man who has been raped. When I challenged this identity and the norms that I had been taught, it was only then that I began to heal. Recently, I've been able to begin reconstructing my own identity, this time not basing it on these traditional masculine traits, but rather on ones that I believe make my own identity as a man. These now include confidence, passion, honesty, loyalty, kindness, and perseverance. Let's work harder to understand how societal norms, like conventional notions of masculinity, can prevent survivors from seeking help. Once we've understood these issues, let's work together to challenge them as the dominant ways of thinking so that we can realize a society that doesn't impose pressures on its most vulnerable, but instead build them up. Today, I ask you to join me in reshaping the way we approach sexual violence against any and all genders, and to challenge your own notions of masculinity. To do this, we must consider how we interact with the men in our lives. Through making these small changes in the way we interact with the men in our lives, we can begin to shape a new society, one in which no one is left putting together their own pieces. To do this, we must resist using phrases like man up and be a man when the men in our lives show vulnerability, and instead tell our sons, brothers, and boyfriends that showing their emotions is healthy, that sensitivity is strength, and vulnerability is power. Thank you.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. Hey, men go through a lot. Men go through a lot, and what stands out is the fact that many of you guys don't want to talk about it, but I think that men such as this one, these are brave men, because at the end of the day, right, there's only one way we can heal, and it's if we have a sense of camaraderie, is if we have a sense of this, I'm not the only one that it has ever happened to, and just because of that piece of information, right, this can also help me look at how other people learned to cope with it, other people, what outlets did they use to heal from it, to learn from it, to see a way out in dealing with this kind of trauma. But also, ladies and gentlemen, for those that are here for the whiskey competition, ladies and gentlemen, the question for tonight, okay, look, the thing is that there's a whiskey tasting that is going to be happening. Eh? And then me, you as an Eagle FM listener, all you have to do is call me, tell me, Kucha, exactly where it is going to be happening. Just where. That's it. Just where it's going to be happening. And that is all. That is all. You are just going to tell me, where has it happened? And that is the only question that we're having for tonight, for that particular competition. So if you want to win a ticket to the whiskey tasting competition, women, mamzela, if you guys want to go and taste whiskey, guys, because whiskey is most the thing. You know, when I used to drink, it was whiskey that was my thing. It was whiskey, it was wines, and then beer. Yeah, because there's nothing better than whiskey crafted by people that know what they are doing. Hey, people that know what they are doing. People that know what they are doing make me happy, because there's never a day that you'll be disappointed, because they know what they are doing. So now imagine all you have to do is just use that $2 airtime or that $1 airtime to just call into studio. The number in studio is 083-288-401. You call into studio and you're like, matriarch, I have the answer. Yeah, the answer is, and then you win your ticket. That's about it. So first come, first serve. I'm just waiting for you guys. All you have to do is tell me where the event is going to be taking place. That is it. The number in studio is 083-288-401. Please do engage. All right. Please do engage. Hey, please do engage. Don't give missed calls. I can't call you back, lovey. I can't call you back. But ladies and gentlemen, as we continue, the reason that I'm playing, I'm letting us experience. Hey, when I talk about, good evening.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening, beloved. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, man?
I'm fine, thank you. Hey, why are you here? Well, can't do the whole time we are listening, but when we are saying Kucha, there's a whiskey tasting, you're like, whoa. Let me use this last seconds to call. It cannot pass me by this one. Hey, okay, so what is the answer?
The answer is more than hotel.
More than what?
Okay.
I'm just waiting for you, sis.
The answer is more than Peak Hotel. I can move any peak.
Oh. Okay, so what is your name?
Maria David.
Uh-huh. Is this the name on your ID?
Yes.
Are you sure? Because mm-hmm. don't be Maria David on the radio and then you are Turonga on the ID.
No, I'm
leave those David. Things, guys. Yeah? Maria David outside, yeah, in the streets where Maria David, you know, Maria David. And then here in real life is Turonga Amadira.
Forever a David.
Forever a David. All right, beloved. So right now, what I need you to do is I need you to text. I need you to text this number. 08.
08.
1.
1.
200.
200.
41.
41.
44.
Oh,
yes, that is the number. You just text them their name and you won it. You are going to go and taste whiskey. How many shots are you going to take? I don't know now with whiskey, but with wine, apparently you just put it in your mouth a little bit just for tasting and then you spit it out. Are you going to swallow?
I'm going to swallow.
That's my girl. Make us proud, my dear. Make us proud. If they are giving cups and t-shirts away, you must also get a cup and a t-shirt, my dear.
I'll even take a takeaway with.
Please. Eh? You must ask them about the bottles. So these bottles, can I have one for a souvenir?
I'll make sure.
All right. Thank you so much, Maria David.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Ciao, ciao. All right. Good evening to you. How are you guys doing? So tonight, you see, there are competitions here at Eagle FM and you people are just playing. You guys are sleeping on the whiskey. You people are sleeping on the whiskey. And then you guys are just chilling there and you're like, oh, why is it going to be so boring this weekend? It's going to be what? But going back to our conversation, ladies and gentlemen, we are sharing stories from people around the world because I want us to know that these things happen. They don't just happen there in your Ovambulen household. They don't just happen in Korehas. They don't just happen in Omaruru. They don't just happen in Itosha. Guys, the Itosha was burning. I was so disappointed. I almost cried. I cried because the elephants, they're gonna burn. You know, I was very sad. But we're talking about this because it happens everywhere. It doesn't only happen in your household. It's not only you that it has happened to. And that is why we're saying that maybe if you are willing to walk a journey of talk therapy sometimes, or just trying, you know, to hear other people's stories and to see if you can relate to anything and see how you can try and heal, then maybe, just maybe, we are creating a society where everybody can thrive. Ladies and gentlemen, we are not doing this just for show. We're doing this to heal. To heal one another, to heal ourselves, so that we can be less messed up human beings. So ladies and gentlemen, we're going to listen to yet another story, and then we are going to end our program for this evening and the topic.
I really love the theme of this conference, Empowering Connections, because it reminds me of how powerful vulnerability is. Vulnerability is at the root of how we connect with each other and the world around us. We can't have a true level of connection with someone without a certain level of vulnerability. But on the other hand, trauma can disconnect us. April is nationally known as Child Abuse Prevention Month. It's estimated that 5 children die every day in the United States due to abuse and neglect. And in honor of the Child Help Awareness Campaign, I have painted 5 of my fingers purple as a visual reminder for the 5 children that die every day in the United States due to abuse and neglect. Every single second of every single minute of your day matters. I don't think anyone would argue with that. Because in 1 second, your life can change. I know mine did. And let's be honest, child sexual abuse is not fun for anyone to talk about or hear about. But we have to get comfortable with the uncomfortable. We have to get comfortable with the uncomfortable because it's the only way we're going to see true progress with this issue and with other issues in our nation. Although it's not comfortable, we have to face it because denial around this issue, which is what I find a lot in this field, is not helping our children. And as a survivor, I know that I'm not alone in this room. It's estimated that 1 in 3 girls are sexually abused before the age of 18. And I am 1 of 3 daughters. It's also estimated that 1 in 6 boys are sexually abused before the age of 18. There are 42 million survivors of child sexual abuse in America alone. Let's wrap our minds around that number, 42 million. And to give you a comparison, this is about 3 times more prevalent than the amount of Americans living with cancer. And we all know someone living with cancer. The difference is there's generally more public support with cancer. And as soon as it's diagnosed, it's generally treated. With this issue, child sexual abuse, I hear a lot of people say, this doesn't happen in my community, this doesn't happen in my school, this doesn't happen in my church. And I always say, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. But the American Medical Association has labeled child sexual abuse a silent epidemic. And I believe this is because it is truly the silence that kills. It's estimated that 2/3 of children will never tell. 2/3 of children. And I believe this is because over 90% of the time, a child is abused by someone that they know. But not just someone that they know, someone that they also trust. See, perpetrators use this pre-existing relationship as a deposit for the child's silence. It's much easier for a child to tell on a stranger than it is a family member or a loved one. But in silence, shame is allowed to grow. And what's kept in secret has power over us. That's why we cannot heal what we don't reveal on an individual level and as a society. Because silence and shame are a predator's weapon.
Save and win at WB in the Pick a Box birthday promo. Enter today with your Smart Buy card. Get a 2 kg bag of Tastic Rice for just $39.99. 3 times 1 liter Crystal Gold Olive Oil Blend for $199.99. A 500 gram Sunshine D Original Brick for only $19.99. And 2 2-liter Fanta bottles for a sweet $37.99. Learn more about Pick a Box at www.vurmanbrock.com. T's and C's apply.
We have to refuse not to keep the secret in our society. And this is not a crime that just happens to at-risk children. I was not an at-risk child growing up. I was quite the opposite. I was a teacher's kid. And any teacher's kids in here know that there's not much you can get away with. The spotlight is always on you. And when I was in the 2nd grade, my mom told me that she had accepted a teaching position at a private Christian school. And she took my 2 sisters and I with her. And it's at this private Christian school where my older sister and I met our best friends. And they were in the same extracurricular activities as we were. And our best friends also happened to be siblings, and their mom also worked at the school with my mom. So it was very convenient to be around this family. And basketball was my sport of choice, my love. And they played basketball as well. But not only that, they lived in the neighborhood right near us. So there was a lot of carpooling going on. Just think of your closest family friends, who you do life with, and this is who this family was for us. But little did I know that someone who was like a father to me, my best friend's father, and someone who also played the role of a basketball coach in my life, would sexually abuse me for years. And he started grooming me at the age of 12. And for those of you who don't know what grooming is when a perpetrator goes out of their way to gain trust and access to the child. And families are groomed as well. Families are groomed so that they will trust the perpetrator to be alone with their child. And after that first incident in the car of sexual assault, when he drove me home one night, I knew I would never be the same. Feelings I had never felt before. Intense shame, blame, fear, and guilt. And no amount of showering could get that dirty, clammy feeling off of me. And I was threatened not to tell, like most children are. And I minimized the event, and I told myself that it would never happen again. But I was wrong. It continued for years. How could I tell my best friend that their father was a monster? How could I tell his sweet wife, who worked at the school, how could I tell her who her husband really was? So as the burden of keeping the secret and suffering in silence continued, I developed severe changes in behavior. I went from being outgoing to socially withdrawn and depressed. I went from making good grades to failing. I had horrible insomnia and awful night terrors. I would wake up in the middle of the night, halfway down the stair landing, with my hand on the stair railing, heart beating out of my chest, not knowing how I got there. And it would take me hours to get my heart rate down after a night terror. But not just that, I also began cutting. Cutting is very common in victims of sexual abuse. And for those of you who don't understand cutting, it is directly related to control. Because at least I could control the pain. At least I could control the bleeding. But worst of all, I lost hope. I lost hope that I could get out of my situation, that it could get any better, that I could tell. And the number one predictor of suicide is loss of hope. But I imagined a scenario in my head where if I were successful in taking my own life, he would be at the funeral. And he would attend to my parents' needs, and he would ask if there's anything he can do to help. And no one would have ever known. Some people take the secret of being sexually abused to the grave with them. But not only that, I started to believe the lies that shame whispered to my soul. I started to believe over time that maybe I did something to bring this on. Maybe this was my fault. Maybe I was a bad person. Maybe I wasn't worth protecting. And many children believe these lies that shame whispers to their soul after sexual abuse. Twice I even went to the emergency room because I broke out in hives all over my body after two separate instances of sexual assault. And the doctors, they tested me for all kinds of allergies, but I wasn't allergic to anything. And so they said she must be stressed. She must be a stressed out little girl. After that, my parents were really worried and took me to different doctors to try to find a physiological reason for what was wrong. They tested my thyroid. They tested me for anemia. But I was healthy otherwise. And no parent wants to consider that their child's being sexually abused. No educator wants to think that a student in their classroom is being sexually abused. The adults around me were never educated on what those simple warning signs and symptoms are. Finally, when I was 16 years old, we did what we always did for the holidays. We spent Christmas Eve and Christmas Day with the perpetrator's family. And the day after Christmas, my sister asked me to go to lunch. And I was so excited because I've always been close with my sisters. And as we're talking over lunch, she looks at me and she gets real serious and she says, Jenna, I'm going to ask you a question and you have to promise to tell me the truth. And of course, in my head, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, she knows I borrowed her brand new shirt and I didn't put it back in the right spot. I'm dead. That's it. I'm dead. Anybody with sisters knows that it's an ongoing battle and it still is today. It never fails, the whole borrowing clothes argument without asking for permission. And this is what I'm thinking in my head. I say, okay, what could be that bad? Okay, I promise. I promise to tell you the truth. She looked at me and she said, has anyone ever hurt you? And without saying a word, I gave her the answer. I broke down into uncontrollable tears right there at the restaurant. The server avoided us several times. It was a big scene. And when I was able to catch my breath, I said, yes, but I can't tell you who because you know this person and you wouldn't believe me. And she said, try me. She said, we're not leaving here until you tell me because he's never going to hurt you again. And I told her, and the important thing is that she believed me. She believed me. And that night we called the police after I told my family. And of course, there's no words for how my family felt. They had gone out of their way to make sure these exact things didn't happen in our life. After we called 911, I made the report. My parents took me to a psychiatrist who officially diagnosed me with post-traumatic stress disorder, insomnia, anxiety, suicidal ideation. And it was two steps forward and seven steps backward in therapy. But thank goodness my parents found our local Children's Advocacy Center. The Children's Advocacy Center is a free national resource for children and families who have been victims of abuse. And at our local Children's Advocacy Center, I didn't feel alone. I didn't feel like I was the only one going through what I was going through. I could see that there were other kids that had been hurt the same way I had. And I felt a sense of community and support. I received free one-on-one counseling, free group counseling. And when we decided to press charges, they helped prepare me for court. And the whole trial process was very arduous. I was on the witness stand for 3.5 hours. 3.5 hours. But thank goodness the jury gave my perpetrator 70 years in prison, and he has to serve at least 20 of those years. Although I never received an apology, I forgave so that it no longer had power over me. And by the grace of God, I was able to embrace the healing process and face the trauma. I cannot stress enough the importance of counseling if you've been a victim of this crime. I was able to trust other people instead of hiding from people. I was able to trust sources of help instead of running or hiding from sources of help. And slowly my walls started to come down. But I'm not just telling you personally that there's hope and healing and that this crime is preventable, but the research tells us that this crime is preventable. That is the good news. The Center for Disease Control has said that this is a public health problem, but that the key is in prevention. That's our solution. Our solution is in prevention. I'll give you an example of when this realization first set in. After I made my outcry, I had to get a SANE exam, sexual assault nurse examination. And as I was at that hospital, my mom waited in the hospital waiting room. And to pass the time, she picked up a pamphlet that read signs and symptoms of child sexual abuse. And as she's reading it, she gets out a pen from her purse and she starts to mark off over 80% of those signs and symptoms that I had displayed through the course of the last few years. And she was appalled because as an educator, for 20 years, she'd never seen such material. I was summed up in one page of bullet points. If only she saw this pamphlet, she could have prevented this from happening, or at least stopped it from happening for as long as it did. That pamphlet looked very similar to this. And this is the Child Help Speak Up Be Safe curriculum. It's one of the best curriculums I've seen for students. And out of her experience as an educator of never knowing what those simple warning signs are, and out of my own experience, out of never having the chance to tell in school, never knowing that it was okay to tell, the idea for Jenna's Law was born. And Jenna's Law bears my name, and it passed first in Texas in 2009. And it mandates that all schools...
Can we just speak about the fact that these American people that are just making moves, they just get laws named after them? Because I think I also want an Udeo's Law. Like, because, whoa, I also want to make an impact like this. I also want an Udeo's Law. Udeo's Law was passed. I was like, yes.
Through 12th grade, have to train their school staff, educators, and students on how to recognize, prevent, and especially report this crime. Now, since 2009, over half the country has adopted some form of legislation for their schools. We know that after Jenna's Law training, educators are about 4 times more likely to report versus their pre-training careers. When we don't address this issue, we feed the deadly silence that this crime thrives on. And when children and adults are educated about the crime, taught safety strategies, who is safe to tell, and how to report, a victimized child is more likely to get the help that they need. I really want to encourage you to look into your community, your school, your churches, and find out what prevention policies are in place, what prevention programs are in place to protect children. You know, we have a lot in place for prevention on texting and driving, and drinking and driving. So why wouldn't we have prevention for a crime that is this prevalent? If you leave here with one thing today, I want you to know that there is hope. We live in the most hopeful day and age, where we have access to online resources, prevention programs, counseling, and support. I want you to know that this crime is preventable. 95% of child sexual abuse is preventable through proper education. That's the good news. That's the good news. And if this is something that you have been through, despite what anybody says, I want you to know that there is healing after child sexual abuse. And if you haven't started that process yet, I hope that you will start today and refuse to keep the secret. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lorid, and I'm a survivor of sexual assault. My family and I, we grew up in Torrance, California. You know, I'm one of 8 kids, so I have 7 siblings, and we just grew up hanging out together, playing tennis together, going outside, camping. You know, when I look back and I'm like, why did I ever decide to go to a college in North Carolina? Going to college, and it's just this very small private Christian school in its own little bubble, was such a weird experience. I met my abuser my first semester there, like very early on, because he was a really close friend of one of my tennis athletes on the team. And we just had met through that, and we'll just like give him a fake name and we'll call him Kyle. So Kyle and I, you know, as friends, he is an upperclassman. I think he was in his fourth year of college at this point. And we just kind of hung out, and he was kind of this cool upperclassman who knew all the people on campus. He was so confident, like knew where to go and all this stuff, and just provided us a lot of access to places that otherwise, like us little first years, like wouldn't have access to. Yeah. So the first time Kyle had really crossed the line, he had invited over a couple of friends back to his apartment, and you're like, hey, like we're going to drink, like, let's do this thing. And little me had never had alcohol before, but I remember like as soon as I had alcohol and I drank it, I was just like, I just feel so anxious right now. Like, I just need to get out. Like, my skin is crawling. I just don't feel safe. And so I just pretended to be asleep. You know, as the night wears on, everyone's like, hey, let's just leave Lorwood here. Kyle and one of my teammates, they'll take care of him. Like, it'll be fine. And we don't want to take him back to the dorm where he's going to be drunk and, like, get into trouble, all this stuff. And so they kind of left me. And so I'm on the floor, like, just trying to sleep. Be like, everyone leave me alone. I don't feel safe. I want to go to bed. And Kyle picks me up, and he's just, like, places me on the couch. And every time I think about that, I just feel so light to him in his mind. I feel like he just like picks me up and puts me on the couch. He's like, I got to tell you something. And I'm like, I don't care. I want to go to bed. And he's like, I got to tell you something. And I was like, okay, what? And he like looks at me really intently. And he's like, oh, okay. I'm like, okay, cool. Thanks for letting me know. Like, this really doesn't change much about our friendship. And he's like, I'm only telling you because like you're from California. You would understand. You know what it's like to not be like feel accepted and to feel really out of place. And I was like, okay, like I really appreciate you telling me. And like, it's like, but you can't tell anyone. You can't tell anyone. Like, you, if the school found out, like, oh my gosh, they would do, all these things would happen. And I was like, okay, like, I'll keep it secret. Like, geez, relax. It's not that big of a deal to me, but since you asked, I'll keep it safe. And as we like continue talking, he like reaches over and he like gropes me on my, and I'm just like, whoa, like, it's not okay. And I like get up and I'm just like immediately just very startled. And I'm just like, this is very weird. This is a brand new experience for me. You know, I'm like, no, you can't do that. Like, that's not okay. Like, I didn't give you consent. That's a boundary. You don't cross that. We're friends. Like, what is going on right now? And I just remember him being like upset. And he's like trying to calm me down. He's like, I'm sorry, but like, you shouldn't, all this stuff. He's like, you're like homophobic. You like hate gay people. That's why you're doing this. Like, I told you something personal and you're like using it against me. And I was like, what is happening right now? Like, I'm really confused because you did something wrong, but I feel like I did something wrong. Like, what is happening right now? And that just kind of continued through the night. But then eventually I just left. And the next day, you know, we ran into each other and he's like, you know, like, you can't do that. Like, you're so like homophobic. You hate black people. Like, you are just like everyone else who like betrays me. And I felt so hurt by that. I was like, oh my gosh, like maybe I am like everyone else. Maybe I am the bad guy. And really was just like so conflicted in my head about this person did something wrong to me, but I feel like I need to make amends for what they did. It's just such a confusing place to be in the moment and to feel like I'm in the wrong when you did something wrong. After some amount of time, you know, he reaches back out and he's like, hey, like, I'm really sorry for the way that I acted. I shouldn't have said those things. Obviously, you don't hate gay people. You don't like hate black people, like all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, like, thank you. Like, this feels really nice to hear because I had dismissed that part of myself. And I was like, maybe I do. But to be able to hear someone like apologize in genuine, like with a genuine heart, it was really like, it really means something. And so after he had apologized, you know, we're hanging out again and we're friends again and things go back to just being like casual, cool friends. So the second time he like crosses the line with me is we're like going back to his apartment. I think we're just like grabbing something random and we're just like going back and forth about some like meaningless argument and we're just bantering. And, you know, out of nowhere, he goes like, oh, like I hate fighting with you. And I was like, it's kind of a weird thing to say. Like, this is a very casual argument. I don't know why you feel this way. And he's like, and then he like grabs me by the shoulders and he like puts me up against the wall. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like I do not like being handled this way. This is not fun. I'm like really scared. He's just like a bigger dude than me. I'm just like, oh my gosh. And he puts his arms on the side. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't feel safe. Like, am I about to get beat? Like, what is it happening right now? And I just feel so like frozen in place. And he like comes in and he kisses me. And I remember he like pulls away and he's like, you're such a bad kisser. And I'm like, no, duh. But again, like I'm trying to stay super calm. I'm trying to stay super composed because I'm like, I don't know what could happen if I freak out. Things might get worse. And so I'm trying to stay super calm. I'm just trying to be like, okay, like it's okay. Like we're going to stay inside our hair. We're going to put our head down and we're going to get through this. And then we're going to just figure it out from there. And I think we had gone to a sporting event and then we had come back and then I just like excused myself. And I was like, hey, like I got to go. Like I need to wake up early for practice or something and just left. But again, like, all those same feelings of just like feeling so disgusted in my own body, of feeling like I don't want to be here, of feeling like, yeah, I just remember like wanting to cut off my lips and I just being like, this is so gross. I feel so gross. And I don't know what to do because all of it is like an internal thing. It's not something that I can wash off. It's something that's inside of me. And I think that was just such a really, really difficult place to be. And honestly, like, I don't remember what had happened afterwards between Kyle and I. I'm sure we had made up because there was another incident, but I don't remember what had happened. Kyle was still very much involved. Like, we were part of the same friend groups. It's a small campus, so people just run into each other all the time. And again, like, every time these things had happened, like, I was alone. There's no one around to witness anything, no one around to be like, oh, like, what Kyle did to Lorwyn was really wrong, and like, we should stay away from it. And so the third time it happened, it was kind of like a month or two in between times before it kind of happened again. We're just, you know, pretending to be friends. In my head, I'm like, just shut up, get through it. Don't tell anybody. You know, no one really cares anyway. Like, and if you told someone and they did care, they'd just make fun of you. They'd use it against you. And so I was like, okay, like, we're just not going to say anything. And we're just going to get through this. And the third time, like, I really don't remember like how I ended up at his apartment, but like, and people have asked me like, oh, we're like, did he like take you by force? And I was like, that's not the feeling I have. That just, the memory is so blurry for me. I just don't know how I ended up there. I think Kyle had just like invited me to his place and he was like, oh, like, let's hang out, like, let's get some food and like watch a movie or something. And I was like, okay, sure, like, whatever, like, that sounds fine. And I think, if I remember correctly, he had initiated that because he was like, I'm really sorry for how I treated you, like, you know, we haven't been really close friends as of late, but like, I want to make it up. And, you know, I was like, oh, like, it's a gesture of goodwill. Like, okay, for sure. And I just remember it being like cold and snowy in my mind. And I get there, something happens, and it's something that, like, as try as I might, like, it's something that I just can't remember. But I remember just being like on the floor on a mattress with like his body pressed up against mine. And I'm just like, I'm waking up and I'm like, it's really hot. I'm like, I'm not wearing a shirt. I'm not wearing sweats. Like, I was definitely wearing those when I came. And just like, I feel his like in between my butt cheeks, and I'm just like, oh my God, this is really gross. Like, I don't feel comfortable. And I can feel it, like, his hand like, is like over. He's like, oh, like, and something happens, but he's like stroking me. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, what is happening? Like, and again, like, I'm just freezing again. Like, I'm just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know if I want to freak out. Like, he's so much bigger than me. If I freak out and like try to fight, like, he's just going to beat me, so it doesn't matter. And I was just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And I'm just trying to stay so calm. And I'm just like freaking out. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I feel so, so uncomfortable. And then he asked me, he's like, is this okay? And I remember in that moment, like, I had so much clarity in my mind, but I was just like, I know he's recording this. I was like, I know he's recording this. But even though I had that level of clarity and I knew, I was like, I know he's recording this. I know he knows what he's doing is wrong. And he's like, is this okay? Like, in my mind, I'm like, if I say no, what's going to happen? If I say no, like, there are no good outcomes for this. It's not as though he's going to be like, oh, like, you set a boundary. Okay, like, I'm gonna let you go. I was just like, this doesn't end well. So I was just like, and I remember just like, I have this very clear image in my mind of this, like, the softest, most timid, like, most coerced yes coming out of my mouth. And just like, yes. And just like barely croaking it out. And he asked again, because I'm like, he has something. He's recording me. And I croak it out again. And I'm like, I pray to God that if someone ever hears this, they can hear the tension in my voice, like, just the most coerced dribble out of a yes ever. And so eventually, you know, after a while, he keeps going, and I'm just like, okay, like, I'm gonna leave now, like, if it's okay. But he like just kept going, and then after a while, I was like, I'm good. So I'm like out of the mattress, I'm like putting my clothes on, I'm trying to be like, oh, like, I'm super tired, like, I want to sleep in my own bed. I'm like trying to come up with like this very nonchalant excuse for why I need to leave right now. And I remember like walking down the stairs super slowly, and I was like, he can see me, I gotta be cool, I gotta be casual. But as soon as I like turn the corner and the trees are blocking my view, I'm like beelining it for my dorm. I'm just sprinting, and I just remember like, it's snowy, it's cold, like, my feet are kind of slipping against the snow as I'm running, and the snow like kind of stings your face. And I like get back to my dorm room, and I just remember like curling up and like squatting on the floor and just like hugging myself. And I was just like, I feel like if I don't hug myself right now, if I don't squeeze myself right now, like, everything is just going to spill out of me, and I can't have that happen right now. I need to keep it together. And so I'm just like squatting there on the floor, like holding myself, and I'm just like, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Like, it's okay. Like, don't freak out. Don't freak out. Freak out. And in my head, I'm just freaking out. I'm like, what is happening right now? Like, so much is going through my brain. And you know, I like get up, and I like, right where I was squatting, right on my right, there's a mirror. And I remember like getting up from the squat and like catching my reflection in the mirror and just like wanting to throw up because I was just like so disgusted with myself. And I remember standing there and just being like, I don't want to be here. I hate how I feel. And I just like get up. I see myself and I turn. And then there's another mirror on the other side for my roommate right there. And I see myself like full face and I'm just like, oh my God, like I want to throw up. Like I hate you so much. Like how could you let this happen? And I turn, I go out, like go to the bathroom and I'm like trying to go to the pee, but I like can't even hold anything. I'm like looking away and I'm just like, I don't even want to look at what is happening because I feel so disgusted with myself. I feel so gross. I feel like I want to just chop everything off. I feel like I want to shower and just scrub everything raw because it's so gross. I feel so dirty. I feel disgusting. I feel like just the worst thing ever. And then I just remember like lying in bed and I just like have silent tears rolling down my face. And I'm like in such like shock and just being like, okay, like I guess this is what it is. And just like falling asleep, like crying. And that was kind of that day. And I remember the first semester of my fourth year of college. And I was so lucky. My second semester of my fourth year, a new counselor comes in and I was just like, okay, this is my chance. It's a brand new slate. I'm going to tell this person. I'm just going to really go in hot and heavy and just lay it all out. So I make an appointment and I come in and he's like, oh, like, hi, Lowered. Like, how are you doing? And I'm like, I want to tell you something that I haven't told anyone before. It's like, okay, like, what's up? And I like spill all my guts out. My freshman year, there's this person and they did this to me and they gaslit me and they made me feel like I was the only person that they could trust. And then I like went back to them and then they did it again. And then I went back and all this stuff. And I was like, I'm a terrible person. I'm just laying it out. And he's just sitting there listening. And I look up and I'm like, oh my God, like I'm such an idiot. I have so much vulnerability regret right now. I feel so stupid. Like, why would you ever do something like this? And he just looks at me and he goes, Lord, thank you so much for telling me. Like, I know that took a lot from you. And I could just feel my shoulders drop like inside my body. I'm just like, oh my God, like I did it. Like I finally managed to tell someone. And I told him, like, I come to you today because I'm so scared that I'm going to do this to someone I care about, that if I get a girlfriend and I do this to her, like I could never ever live with myself. And he was like, you know, like that's a really like complex thought for you to have. And I'm so glad that you came and saw me today because like this is the first step. And he was like, or to be honest, like I don't ever see you doing like something like that to someone because of how you personally feel. I think you would stop yourself much before then. And I just felt like coming out of there, I just like had this smile on my face. I was like, you did it, buddy. Like you told someone, like, good job, you know, because for so long, I was like, I'm never going to tell anyone. I can't tell anyone. Like that's it, you know? And I came out of that counselor session and, you know, later in the night, we're like meeting up with some friends and they're like, oh, like, how was your day? What you do today, Lord? And I'm like, oh, like I went to see the counselor today. And they're like, oh, the new guy. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, oh, what'd you guys talk about? And I was like, you guys want to go talk about it? And that's to provide a little bit of context. Like in college, my guy friends and I, we had this thing called laundry room talks, where anytime one of us wanted to talk about something like a little serious, a little heavy, we'd be like, laundry room. And we would go, we would like all like cram ourselves into a laundry room. We'd like sit on top of the dryer. We'd like close the door. We'd turn off the lights and we'd be like, all right. And oh, bless their hearts. And I tell them, I'm like, hey, you guys remember Kyle? And they're like, yeah, I remember Kyle. And I was like, freshman year, Kyle like did these things to me. And they're like, what? And I feel so much hesitation right now because I'm like, oh my God, like, I was on a high from telling a counselor and I'm so stupid for like telling my guy friends, like, why would I do such a thing to myself? And I'm like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I'm freaking out. And they're like, dude, like, thank you so much for telling us that. Like, and I was like, oh my God, like so much relief. And they're like, yeah, he was a pretty weird dude. And I was like, oh my gosh, you thought that too? And they're like, yeah, you said some stuff to me too. And I was just like, oh my God, like this was happening to you guys too. And none of us said anything. And they were just like, hey, like, we're here for you. And we're like, thanks so much for telling us. And we just like kind of had a moment where we're like all hugging. And then we like went back downstairs and like it joined the rest of the party. And so after I had told the school counselor and those three friends, while I had a lot of time to reflect, I was just like, I want to actually write about what had happened to me. I write it and I feel ashamed. I'm like, oh my God, this is so stupid. Like people are going to judge me so much. And I take a pause and eventually I finish it. And I have this really ready polished out rough draft and I send it to one of my really good friends and I'm like, hey, this is the thing that has happened to me. It was really difficult, but whatever I need from you right now is for you to proofread this. And she reads it and she gets back to me and she's like, hey, like, first of all, that was really hard. That was really hard for me to read, to proofread, to be objective. And we just called and we were like, thanks so much for telling me. Like, I really appreciate you. You know, I care about you so much as a friend. And I had gotten it all polished up and ready to publish. And I was like, okay, this is going to be a thing. We're just going to go for it. You know, I just sent it for college. I'm going to send it for this blog and we're just going to do it. So I like put up on my Instagram, like, hey, tomorrow I'm going to like release this thing. And I post up a short little snippet of the first paragraph. And I'm like, it'll be up tomorrow. I'd really appreciate it if everyone could take a look at it and read it. And so the following day I posted it. Immediate regret. I'm just like, I am so stupid. Like, why would you do something like this? Like, come on, dude. Like, have we not learned our lesson? And I'm like, leave it. It's out there. Let people stare. Let people look. It's fine. People have looked at me before. They'll look at me again. It's fine. People who care, they matter, but they won't judge me. People who judge me, they don't matter. I don't care about them. And it was just so much support came in. Like, so many people that I just genuinely was like, oh, you don't even care about me. People were just like, hey, like, thank you so much for writing about this. Like, I know this was so hard for you. Like, similar thing happened to me in college from someone else. And like, I know what it's like. And I felt some shame, but I'm so like thankful that you were able to write this and be so positive about it anyways. And just so many people were so, so kind and just generous. And I felt so unbelievably lucky. And I'm just like very unsure. And I'm like, I text them. I'm like, hey, I wrote this thing. Would love for you to read it. Let me know. And I'm just like so terrified. I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Like, this was a mistake. This was a mistake. Why would I do something like this? And then the following day, my dad calls me and I'm just like, oh, I remember picking up his phone and I see my dad's name. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so screwed. I'm going to get yelled at right now. And he's going to be like, how could you do something so stupid? How could you be so irresponsible? And I'm like, and I'm just like, I could feel my heart racing. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And I'm like, and my dad goes like, my son. I remember him saying that. He goes, my son. And I'm just like, oh, shoot, here it comes. Like, I'm so screwed right now. I'm going to get yelled at. He's like, and I can hear him like start to sob. And I'm like, what is happening right now? And he's like, I'm so sorry you had to go through that. But you were all alone in North Carolina and that I couldn't be there for you. And he's just like so vulnerable. He's just being so honest. And I was so terrified, right? And I'm so scared that my dad was going to yell at me. And here he is like coming at me and being like, I'm so sorry you were alone through that. I'm so sorry I couldn't be there for you. And I was just like, I felt so much relief. And he was like, Mom read it too. And Mom, she said, like, my son is so strong. How could he go through that all by himself? We're such bad parents. And I just remember like being on the phone with them and I was like, no, like, you're not bad parents. Like, stuff happens. Stuff just happens. And it's only because you guys were good parents. Like, I was able to make it to the other side. And it was such a relief to like hear that from your parents, for them to be like, we're so proud of you. I think the reason that I continue to like share my story, to continue to be vocal, continue to advocate for SARS, continue to work for these nonprofits is I have siblings. And I would like to have kids one day. And I always think to myself, like, if I was my sister, if I was my kid, like, how would I want them to act? And the thing that always comes to me is like, I would hope and pray that they feel comfortable enough to tell me, because I just know how hard it is. I know how isolating it is. I know how hard it is to just be able to tell someone like, hey, I went through this thing, and to have so much uncertainty over whether or not they would respond well. The thing that always pushes me is I don't want that to be the case. I want to change that narrative. I want people to be like, you know what? There's someone who cares. There are people who care. There are people who are willing to listen to me. There are people who have gone through the same thing and they made it out and they're okay. And so I can make it. And that's always, always my thing, because you feel so alone. You feel so isolated. You feel like you're the only person ever going through this. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. I really do appreciate it. And I hope that if you've gone through something similar, that you go at your pace and find a way to tell someone and look for better days.
Look for better days, my darlings. Look for better days. I hope that your hearts are touched. I hope that something has happened there that moved your spirit. Don't suffer in silence. There is, even if we say whatever we say about the government, psychiatric is there, guys. And psychiatric is not a place for crazy people. It is a place with professionals that can help you through it. There's Childline. There's Lifeline. There's Star for Life. There is Red Cross. There is government assistance. Guys, do not go through these types of things by yourself and think that you are alone, and speak up about it. Even if you think in your heart, could just speak up about it, and they'll do what? No, they won't do anything, right? But at least another human being will know. Eh? Because most of the times, right, we look at it like they won't be able to do anything about it. And that's most probably true. But is it really about them doing something about it? Or is it about, it's about us being able to tell another human being of what we have gone through? From me, the matriarch, I love you more than you think I do. Bye bye.